Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hide and Speak with me, Matt Saxon. Today's guests are British band Flight, also known as Will Taylor and Nick Hill, who have brought along with them the incredibly talented Matt Field, aka M Field, who's also a member of their live band and a collaborator on their third and latest self-titled album, released in October this year, 2023. Taylor and Hill met in secondary school and settled in London, where their literary influences trickled into their songwriting. The band took its name from Sebastian Flight of Evelyn Waugh's Brideshead Revisited, and the band went on to release the critically acclaimed The Loved Ones in 2017, which was followed by the White Rose EP in 2019 and leading to their second album, This Is Really Going to Hurt, in 2021. Now out on tour promoting their third album, which includes collaborations with Billy Martin, Laura Marling and M Field, which is also produced by Andrew Sarlo, Will, Nick and the band very generously took some time out the morning after their Newcastle show to come to Thornley Woodland Centre to record today's episode. It's worth mentioning very briefly that we also had another lovely guest in the Birdhide with us, Babs Baker, photo taker. She was very kindly showing us a bunch of photos she was taking and chatting about her X Factor career, among other anecdotes, during the recording. I was trying my best to mic her up when she was chatting, so you may need to focus your hearing a little more when she's on. I'll be back at the end of the episode, but for now, please sit back and enjoy today's chat with Will, Nick, M Field and myself on Hide and Speak with Flight. Welcome to the podcast. I've got the lovely chaps of Flight here. I've got Will.
Hello.
Nick. And we've got Matt, who's also M Field, known as M Field. Yes.
By some.
Yeah. Yes. Special guest.
Yes. Today's podcast. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
You're very welcome. We're here at Thornley Woodland Centre. It's a favourite spot of mine for the podcast. And actually, you know what? I'm going to get my guest to do the introduction of where we are and just kind of tell the people listening what you're seeing and how you're seeing it, I suppose.
Well, I feel like if this was World War One, we'd be sniping here. I mean, it's a sort of a thin wooden slit, and we're looking out at a frosty kind of clump of trees. There's some bird feeders over there. There was a very still deer in the distance for a moment there. We have some lovely local bird watchers to our right. Mm-hmm. It's nippy. Certainly nippy.
Definitely is, isn't it? I personally feel like a football pundit with this microphone on the bottom of my chin. I'm using a handheld, so I don't usually do that. I just feel like I'm about to.
You must have quite a cold chin.
Actually, it's there's condensation on it right now.
Okay,
so
that's good.
It's moist and warm, but yes. So you played.
You see any more owl activity from that box?
Oh, owls!
I saw one last week. We just saw the head, but I don't know if it was just.
Oh, so that's an owl box. We've got a bird watcher in the hide here who's informing us about an owl box.
Is it that one?
I mean, we came here to see some birds.
Yeah.
And I've heard jeers on the wheel.
And an owl is one of the people's favourites.
Oh yeah, definitely. Wise owl.
Will we catch the flash of an owl?
So here, we usually get.
Do you often see Red Philip here?
Red Philip died.
Oh, did he?
He lived for 15 years.
Nick, why would you say such a triggering thing?
Sorry.
Who's Red Philip?
Who's Red Philip?
That was actually, Barbara Baker from Barbara Baker, Photo Taker. Red Philip was one of the first kites brought here in, I think, 2004. And he lived to 15. He did. He successfully reared about, I think, 5 chicks from between 2006 to 2008 or 2009. There's a big poster on the cafe.
We were reading the poster in the cafe. That's yeah, what we. Yeah. That's our information on Red Phillip.
It was 20. He was here 20 years ago. I've got photographs of the original B8 red kite. But I normally go to Scotland and Ballymacom, where you see about 1,000 kites regularly at 2 o'clock.
So it's 10 a penny for you, really, a kite, a red kite.
Amazing place to go there. You can do some work there and maybe do some research on the farm there, Ballymacom.
Wow. I mean, I'll stop you there and say we know nothing of birds. We're not bird people at all.
Oh, and you had me fooled because I thought, oh my God, very young ornithologist here.
Yeah, no, we're actually musicians.
Yeah, I'm a singer as well. I used to sing. I was on X Factor once. Yeah.
No way.
Oh God, I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Oh my God, you should have.
Didn't get through to the.
Were you on the telly?
I met Simon Cowell and everybody. Yeah, that was in Newcastle way back. Newcastle years ago. Going off subject of nature. Sorry.
Oh no, it's all right.
I even said that, please.
No. God, is there footage on YouTube of you?
I don't know, but somebody said they saw me do the roly poly when I got the first, like when you know when you get the first thing, but when you go through, but you have to meet like 3 or 4 different producers. You don't just get there once. You have to meet wear the same clothes and meet the different people before you meet the other ones. So.
Was it nerve wracking?
Wasn't too bad, no, really.
That sounds like You're my hell. Sounds terrifying.
No, you strike me as a natural, so.
I'm a Polish sure Geordie from Pegswood. I was born in Pickford at Pegswood.
There you go.
My mum and dad were Poles. We came over Pegswood. From the war and, yeah, near
Morpeth. Yeah, I'm Lynemouth lad. Well, I live there. I'm not from.
Lad. Yeah. Lad.
Yeah. Lovely, there we go.
Yes, yeah. So there you go.
Excellent.
And
do you want
to. I live in Macon County as well, so.
Okay, so, yeah, nice. Do you want to? What's your online presence? Online. You had a really good catchphrase earlier on. What was it?
It's Babs Baker Photo Taker. But
amazing! Nice. I love that.
Because really, I couldn't think of anything else, and I did my 2 degrees at Sunderland University for photography.
Excellent.
So I got involved into photography in a big way.
Lovely stuff.
Be hard to top that catchphrase. That's a good one.
Yeah. It is a good one. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty bad, actually.
I will remember it.
My name before was Baker was Shimshuk, but you can't get me anything to rhyme with Shimshuk.
No, that's a difficult. Shimshuk. That's much harder.
Pictures you took.
There you go.
Oh wow.
There you go.
Oh look, deer.
Oh dear.
Down in that perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
In that little tunnel.
In that little tunnel of trees. Lovely. Yeah, we got some nice deer here.
It's sort of like a child's drawing of a deer. It's so perfect.
Babs Baker, photo taker. Love it. So, yeah, I guess back to the flight chat, if that's all right. Obviously, had to have you on the podcast with a name like Flight, although it's a slightly different spelling. Sorry about that. That was a terrible little segue.
No, it's good. It worked.
Yeah. So you very kindly came out whilst you're on tour, Newcastle, last night, and yeah, how do you feel the gig went? You enjoy the Newcastle crowd, and
yeah, it's a beautiful sort of historic feeling venue, the Clooney, and the crowd was so considerate and so sort of they got on board and they were quiet. And
yeah, they did. Yeah, it was a lovely audience. Yeah, but how's the tour going so far? I remember you were saying yesterday that what is this, like month 3 of a huge.
Yeah.
Tour?
Yeah.
I think, it will have been about 3 months straight of shows by the end of this UK run, which for us is like a long, I think for anyone, I think that the wisdom is that you should be, you know, touring for 3 weeks, you know, have a little break, maybe 3 weeks off, 3 weeks on. Yeah. You know, we're on the conveyor belt and we're going. It's actually a kind of a magnificent feeling when you sort of break through the, through the wall of that, and it just feels like you're just on an endless adventure. Last night was such a great crowd. There was a real kinetic energy.
Yeah.
And it's nights like that that just kind of just keep propelling you forward.
Keep you going. Yeah. New album. Let's talk the new album. I want to. I'm a huge fan, and I want to drop a name here that you worked with, a guy called Andrew Sarlo, the producer, who's helped a lot with this album and the last.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of him as a producer. He's produced one of my favorite albums of all time, which is Green Twins by Nick Hakim.
Yeah, it's a very special record.
It's amazing, and I'm just really curious how that all came about. You know, the working with Andrew Soller, because you went over to America, didn't you? To work with him.
I mean, I'll try and make a long story short. But with Andrew, he was Big Thief was the band that kind of cottoned us on to Andrew as a producer, and we were trying and failing really to make our second record kind of finished and feel right. And making records a funny one, because you have to feel like you've made it, you know. And you can make 10 songs, but you don't necessarily feel like you've made a record. And so we were a little stuck. We were maybe creatively just getting into a little bit of a rut with the people we were working with. So we went to LA to shake it up, and we went and worked with a series of different producers, Andrew just being one of them. And you know, Justin Raisin was one. We worked on Easy Tiger, Under the Skin, I've Got a Girl with him. He was Angel Olsen, Ariel Pink's producer, so it was a bit more bombastic, and various other people. But Andrew was the one who was like, we love those Big Thief records, the way they sound modern and the way they sound ancient at the same time.
I love that about them.
Yeah, whoever's responsible for that. And to be honest, you know, a lot of the time it's not the producer's doing that's the way something sounds. It's because of the band's innate qualities.
Of course, yeah.
But he did immediately, when we worked with him, draw out our best qualities. And with hardly lifting a finger. It was the shortest session we'd ever done.
Was it?
The least we've ever agonized. You know, it seemed almost criminal how kind of early we left the studio and how little we'd added to these recordings. We were so used to having to sort of overcompensate, add so many more flavors and colors to make it feel like we'd made an interesting sound. And he was the first person to say, no, the way you sound is... He didn't even say it out loud, he just made it so.
Yeah.
He just said, the way you sound is this, and I'll make it sound great.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to add any, like, magic fairy dust or anything like that. And it was really frustrating, because that was the last session of the whole record. And we were like, oh, God, if only we'd done this right at the front.
Right.
We'd done the whole thing with him. Yeah. So this new record was a way of redeeming that, and we just flew him over from LA, and we did a London record.
So came about over here.
And a huge key ingredient with people like Matt, who were also performing on it and wrote Defender with us, and that beautiful guitar and Defender is all Matt's performance.
Ah, I did not know that.
Yeah,
nice work.
Thanks.
and then Don Monks, who engineered it, who is. I think just the great engineer. He's a brilliant producer too, but he's just the greatest kind of engineer of our time. He just kind of puts a mic in front of something, and it sounds immediately like a record you've heard 1,000 times before. Somehow, no one else can do it, and it's so simple what he does. And I can't quite explain it. He has an extraordinary instinct for when you've gotten the take as well.
Okay,
he can tell you immediately when you've got it and you should stop.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful thing, because normally it's about the first or second take, and he just goes, yep, that's the one.
Amazing. Yeah, it saves days and agony having that instinct in the
studio. You can really get red light syndrome, can't you, when you're overdoing takes.
He doesn't let you have the red light syndrome, because he doesn't tell you that the red light's on.
No way.
No, you're just running it. Oh. You know, just like running it through, being like, okay, I think this goes here, this goes there, and then by the time you've got to the end of, you know, the run through, quote unquote run through, he sort of speaks through the microphone in the control room and says, right, that's it, that's lunch.
Amazing.
And he's secretly recorded you doing it, and that's what ends up on the record. It's just such a funny little tricksy skill. He's a tricksy little hobbit.
Little trickster. I really love the new album. It almost sounds sparser than the other ones, but way more full in the same way. I don't know how to explain that, but
I guess the less you put in something,
I think that's it. It gives it, you know, your mind can kind of connect the dots a little bit more when there's a lot less going on, and I think that's a way to give the listener a little bit of work to do whilst they're listening to the record. And
I think space creates volume somehow, like silence makes non-silence louder. Maybe that, and that's just some science, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of space where we're looking right now, there's not a great deal of action, unfortunately.
I'm looking at this deer. Sorry, I'm not giving you very good. Not giving you good chat at all because I'm just having a moment with this deer.
Well, I'll take it over to our special guest for a moment.
Yeah.
Matt Emfield. I saw you play last night. It was the first time I'd seen you play it. First time I'd heard your music. I really enjoyed it. You're from South Africa, am I right? Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
So, first off, how did you get involved with the Flight Lads? Obviously, I've just heard that you co-wrote Defender.
Yeah. Quite a few years ago, we were on the same record label, and we ended up doing a show. My band, I still have a band called Biedenberg, and we played a show with Flight at Moth Club in London. We opened for them. So that would be where I met them first, and then we had a sort of little hangout time at a strange party thrown in a place called OC Island. It was an Island Records party. Okay. We sort of like hung out a little bit there, but didn't really speak to them for years after that, a couple of years. And then when I moved to London, I ended up moving in, just through the fact that London is quite interconnected and stuff, I ended up moving into Will's old room in East London. And he'd moved around the corner, and he was around a lot, and sort of we just sort of struck up friendship. And quite soon after me moving, they were going on tour, asked me to play keyboards and stuff, which I did. And yeah, I guess just from there became sort of part of, well, yeah, I guess we were just more connected. And then the recording of this album was, well, beginning early last year. And yeah, was obviously very up for writing and doing all those things. And yeah, I mean, hearing Will talk about the process with Andrew and Dom, I got to witness that a little bit. And yeah, it was kind of, yeah, it was really inspiring to see. I love that way that they made the record. I think it really comes across in the recordings, and the sort of the intention. There's a really strong intention, which I feel like I've not been able to do before. So it was cool. Yeah, it was cool to see that's possible, and to be a small part of it was cool. But yeah, I guess we just we're basically friends because we're very close by and like to just chat
just,
and
just geography, and that's
like
it.
To eat food and stuff.
Yeah. That food.
Yeah.
I think Matt and I both have broke with expensive taste.
Oh yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, we like to have a little fancy meal together sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Nice. What's your go-to fancy meal?
Well,
there's a restaurant in Dalston called the Little Duck.
Yeah, which is at the fancy end of last tour where we went. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a specific meal that's a go-to meal.
Soup.
There seems to be a common soup theme with you lads.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
No, and you happen to see me.
We just keep on encountering soup. We had late night soup last night.
Late night soup.
Yeah, we had late night soup. Yeah. It was tepid.
It's heavy 24 hours, but normally I don't go in for
soup. It was tepid though. No. Yeah.
It was tepid soup.
It was tepid vegetable soup. Tasty.
Being shown a magnificent picture of Robin.
Lovely Robin picture. From
nailed that.
Circling back,
circling back.
I think
just
it was
like Red Phillip in the sky to meet his mate.
I think for us, this album was the new thing for us, was collaborating with lots and lots of new our lovely friends who are all incredibly talented and showed that during the process.
Sadly, none of those were Red Phillip, but
So who a brief list of the people who were involved, if that's okay.
We had Will's lovely partner Billy Martin join us for a couple of songs, and Laura Marling featured on a track called Tough Love.
Amazing.
And Jess from the Staves came in for a song or two, and we had Surrender Sam on drums for a song, and a guy called Matt Ingram on drums on other songs.
Will Reese
from the Mystery Jets. Yeah, it was sort of, we just, I guess because it's the two of us now, we sort of surrounded
Enfield.
Ourselves. And her ensemble and strings, yeah.
That's a great collective. It's kind of an all. It's our friend Ellie, and she runs this sort of all female, all non-binary, sort of classical kind of collective, or ensemble, if you will.
Yeah.
There's like 40, 50 different I think they're all string players, or are they? Do they play other things?
I think they are.
I think they're all string players. So if you ever, you know, you ever need a string player, call on Ellie. You know, she's got she's got this sort of stable of amazing people. But we've always her and Denny and Coco, the three string players we normally play with, and they just came in for a day, like a string day, on one of the, on the studio week. And it's crazy in a day what they kind of did to the whole record. You were there. Yeah. We thought it would be cool for you to be there. I mean, we hadn't. So Nick and I don't write music. You know, we don't score it or anything. Oh, and neither does Andrew.
I wonder where you were going with that.
Yeah, we don't write songs.
Yeah, we write songs.
The songs writers.
AI writes them.
Yeah, no, we don't. I can't score or read music or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. No, same.
Yeah, and so we just sort of go, we kind of go like nah, 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 just like pick all out the notes on the piano and sort of start writing out sort of like A, B, F, you know, kind of like this sort of awful child, like on the back of a napkin, more or less, you know what I mean? And they are very lovely and like instinctive and patient with us, and they'll know exactly what we're asking them to do, and they'll do it, and we can do some trial and error. It was just like a long but very productive, like creative day with three string players, and you zoom out and listen to that record, and it's got strings all the way through it, and that's like a really important voice on that record. And again, there's real room to hear.
Yeah,
I think sometimes if you've got an already crowded production and you add something like strings to it, it can be like a texture.
Yeah,
you know, or and it can start to feel a little bit like there's a bit of pomposity to the arrangement. It's like a little bit too full. It's like, oh, it's a bit grand, isn't it? Whereas with these recordings, because there's so little happening, to put strings in there, even just these three, you know, two violins and a cello, it's suddenly such a loud voice. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, but I think even on Defender, how it ended up, I can imagine if you got someone who was sort of like a professional arranger or something to arrange, but they might have been a bit overwrought, and like the way that they just sort of like they sort of like glow into being, and it's just sort of it's not like, oh, they've got some string parts, it's sort of just like this extra
like, I remember just saying just play one note,
you just
play
said one
as
note
as long as you can.
And I remember being really impressed by how that worked out. It was the right thing to do. I mean, even I might have overcomplicated it or something, or done something weird, or I don't know.
I feel like Dom as well, like had got the memo that it's like very chambery and very real, and like flaws and all. I think this is the same with a lot of the performances in the album. It's like you hear the humanness in it, and I think with strings it's like, let's double it and make it sound lush, and suddenly you have like a different sound. But it was like, nope, single track, that we're not gonna overdo this.
A little bit tuny sometimes too, and it's quite like, sometimes feels like sinister when it's a little bit out of tune. The instrumental section right at the end of Defender, there's like a guitar solo,
yes,
that's like, it seems written like it's just like an instrumental piece.
Is it all just improv?
It was just that we were supposed to fade out, and Matt just kind of went off on one on the guitar.
Nice.
And it's like my favorite bit, the whole thing.
Yeah, it's lovely. Is it, you playing like a nylon string on that bit? Is that right?
Yeah. And now Will forces me to play that again and again.
And Nick was playing it in America when Matt was.
Yeah, you sent me a video of you playing it. I remember.
But he learned the exact improvised solo.
It
took me ages, and my fingers were broken afterwards.
Yeah. But it's so funny because it is, to me, it's like, it's actually my guitar solos on previous records as well have been fully just wing it, improvise, really know what I'm doing. But then you have to learn those improvised solos. I kind of love that.
Yeah.
There's this sort of initial moment of improvisation, and then followed on by like a moment of like complete non-imagination or bravery to improvise ever again. Just
one shot. I was just going to say, I think what made this album so joyful to record was the collaboration aspect of it. I think it was, we only gave ourselves 7-8 days in the studio.
No way.
And it was
really,
and we really focused in on getting the songs finished before we went to the studio. That's a mistake that we'd made previously, is going into a session sort of a little unprepared, and that that can just, you know, derail the whole thing. And so for this session, everything was just, we'd spent 6 months sitting down at a table, making sure that every little detail was completely finished, so that when we went into the studio, it was just about discovering the arrangements there and then with our friends, and letting people actually kind of express themselves on these songs that we were just sort of showing to them, mainly for the first time. And so you hear these people kind of feeling out, these incredibly talented people feeling out the sort of the music, and it was inspiring for us, certainly. And I think also it's the first time we'd ever really collaborated with people in the writing process, because before then, it'd only been us writing the songs. And so on this album, we had like Matt, we had our friend Cam come in and write a couple of like one song with us, and a couple of other people. It was just, yeah, it put us
on good behavior.
It did, yeah.
Made us write a little quicker and overthink things a little less.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So what in the past, how's it worked with the song? Actually, you know what? If I can just divert slightly, I would just like, because I think that if there's people who are listening who aren't super familiar with you, is it possible to do a 5-minute deep dive on how the band started and how everything all came about?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're doing a bio.
Quick bio.
Quick there bio. You go. Shall I do a speed bio?
This is also for me.
Several sizes of bio available. Like, do you want the 5-minute?
Yeah. A tight 5, a tight 10.
Or do you want the Hide and Speak bio?
The Hide and Speak bio is just a
special one.
It's chaos.
You can add this to your EPK. It's a little audio clip. Look at Red Kite.
Well, so Flight formed in Red Kite. It started officially as Flight 10 years ago, I'd say, just over 10 years ago. Yeah, in London, Nick and I, John Supran, it really kind of, you know, like it took its first form then, 10 years ago. But really, 20 years ago was when Nick and I first knew each other and when we were first being in bands and stuff. We were just never in bands together.
So you grew up together, is that right?
In the same town, yeah.
We grew up in the same town. Nick was 3 school years above, so you don't speak to people.
No.
When they're 3 school years younger than you.
It's generations distance when you're that age, isn't it?
Yes. Might as well be 50 years.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But we were in a... our initial meeting was connected because we were in a city musical theatre project together, like with a council run musical kind of group of people. It's like one of those kind of keep your kids entertained at the weekend sort of things.
I see. What was the production?
I think it was Half a Sixpence and West Side Story.
Lots of finger clicking in the West Side Story.
A lot of cheeky finger clicking.
Oh, lovely.
Are there any jazz hands in West Side? I don't think there are.
No.
I'd say it's verging on jazz hand territory, but no.
Yeah. Stage freeze. Don't actually say stage freeze. The ages I would have been. You get there. <He's
coming. laughs> Oh, that got me.
I would have been about 11, and Nick would have been 13, 14.
Mm.
Yeah. And we our respective bands back then fought each other in Battle of the Bands.
Oh,
we battled.
Lovely.
Did you know Battle of the Bands? Sparrowhawk.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
Sparrowhawk. Okay, Sparrowhawk. Shut up. Oh.
Can you see?
Look at the hawk.
Did you see a fly?
No, I've got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Where are the binoculars?
There was. I have not really been using the binoculars.
I've got it in my sights.
Have you got it?
Oh, it's just in that thicket.
There's two, because there's one right there.
Finally, a little bit of
some action. Some sweet action. I've lost it now. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. We started... This is the 10 years ago stuff when we met back up and we were putting our band together in London. We were very, very poor. Poorer than we are now, even. And to pay our rent, we would busk on the high street in Portobello Road. And we just learnt that through harmonising as much as possible, more people would stop and give us more money.
Wow.
And so the incentive for harmonising in the way that we still to this day do, it was based entirely on the fact that people just...
Couple more
people
quids.
People stop for longer and give you more money if you harmonise.
Mm. Oh, there you go.
And it paid our rent.
Yeah. The harmonies, a friend of mine years ago, told me that it sorts the men from the boys. And I've never forgotten that little phrase.
I like it. Well, and then very quickly, actually, in that period of time, there was a, without us really even realizing, but there was a bit of an industry sort of hype, as they say, mm-hmm. when sort of, and really what that is when one record company person gets interested, and then someone from a different record company goes, oh, that person over there is interested in this, therefore I should probably, to be safe, be interested too. And then suddenly there's a bit of a landslide of everyone in the music industry sort of whipping themselves into a frenzy saying, we all should sign this. So all of this had happened retrospectively. I found out that this is what was happening, but at the time we weren't aware. And we did this sort of, we put on this pointless little gig at the Lexington in King's Cross, and, you know, expecting there to be a, you know, a handful of like friends at this gig. This is like our third gig, maybe. It was absolutely ran to the rafters with queues around the corner.
Ooh.
And it was just music industry. There's no real people. No, they're not real people, the music industry. I'm joking.
Fox.
There
he is. Right, ooh, down the center.
Majestic. That's not like they have in London. This is an actual healthy fox. Look at that.
A little bit more organic fox than
not a crush eating fox. Yeah. Not a crush. So my cat at home just got mauled by a fox, and I had to take him to the vet on off back in London.
Is your cat all right?
He's stitched up and he's in a cone and he's very sad. So I'm looking at this fox slightly resentfully.
Mm. It's not the same fox, Will.
I know, I have to keep telling myself that.
He's come to visit his family.
It's like road rage with Fox. Like, all the motorists are the same person that cut you up the other day.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, continue to cut you up all the time.
No, that's like a different species of fox. That's a beautiful fox.
Yeah.
Ever since you said this is almost like a World War One scene, I'm kind of expecting there to be some soldiers coming over that hilltop over there. It's sort of, it does have the feeling of slightly like Calm Before the Storm, doesn't it?
It doesn't feel like a good place to be stationed, though.
No, you're
kind
it's
of
true.
Low ground, no visibility.
Yeah. There's something about those two gnarled trees there as well, which makes me think of, like, I don't know.
What is it about the, like, these kinds of structures that even these four sensitive boys watching birds talking about music, it just
brings that out in us.
Just war. So easy.
Frosty floor as well, isn't it? So.
I mean, I didn't actually think of it until you guys started talking about it.
Well, I really appreciate you coming. We have to let you go to continue your tour, and you've got places to be, people to see, Turkish baths to enjoy.
Yeah. It's our day off today, I'll just specify that.
Before we go, I wanted to know, you wanted to ask something about South African birds. I wonder, do you know about South African birds? Or is there anything in particular that you...
No, I don't. I was just wondering, like, what your kind of knowledge about birds was growing up in South Africa. Like, I assume the birds in South Africa are very tropical-looking birds interesting.
Not everywhere, actually. And that's what I... Like, when I was very young, I loved birds. And I wanted to see parrots and things like that. And there is a parrot that you get called the Cape Parrot. But I've never seen one. They're very, very rare. I think there's, like, five in one forest somewhere. It's that kind of thing. Yeah. You can go on a pilgrimage to try and find them. But there's not many parrots or tropical birds. There are, in parts of the country, there's beautiful birds called lurries, which are very colourful, and those, I think, would be the kind of thing that you'd imagine. There's a Knysna lurrie. It's like K-N-Y-S-A. It's a place. But there's a lot, there's a lot of interesting birds there. A lot of birds of prey as well. And, like, you get hornbills in parts, which are pretty cool.
Mm.
And then I had a trusty, like, red bird book that had illustrations of all the birds that I used to look at all the time.
Nice.
I'll
look up some of these birds online, and
I've got a very, like, consistent woodpecker in my garden.
Have you?
That I get to see every day.
That's really cool.
Ooh, and I think that's because as a boy I was always obsessed with
woodpeckers.
For sure.
Woody woodpecker. Enjoy.
Perhaps that's what it was. Yeah, just in an ambient sort of way.
During lockdown, I had a woodpecker in my garden at 7 p.m. every single day during summer. It was really nice. It was like clockwork. You just could time it with my watch.
You sort of have an alarm, a nice early alarm like that in lockdown, because I was sleeping until horrible hours. Otherwise,
7 p.m.
Oh, p.m. I had that. Oh, sorry.
Oh God, I was. Yeah, I'm not an early riser.
7 a.m.
7 p.m. was your wake up.
7 a.m. Someone has a
waiting for the woodpecker at 7 a.m. No, not me. So yeah, thanks very much for doing this, taking the time out. It's been lovely.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for performing last night for us.
Having me.
That was like, I could see that our audience were just transfixed. I was.
Thank you very much. Thanks for letting me jump on the lineup and just do that. I don't know.
Honestly, it really made the whole night, and today has made
amazing.
That coming here has been, you know, often our tour manager said it was like often you just on a day after you just push on to more concrete.
Yeah,
you know, so to be
find a cafe.
You've given us a beautiful bit of punctuation.
Well, that's exactly what I hope that the podcast can bring for the guests, and also, in turn, the listeners can enjoy this and hear that perspective from you as well.
In turn, good little bird pun there.
Yeah. Yes. Unintended. But no, thank you very much for coming. It was wonderful to meet you all, and I hope the rest of the tour goes well. Congratulations on the new album. It's an absolute diamond of an album. And
thank you. That's really kind.
Thank you.
I hope you wish you all the best. So thanks very much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
So there we are. Episode 13 of Hide and Speak with Flight. Thank you very much to Will, to Nick, to Matt, to Babs Baker. There's so many people to thank. All of the people involved in Flight, the management, the tour management, and the promotion and stuff like that. Everyone was absolutely amazing. I just want to say a quick note on future episodes of the podcast. I have a huge stack of episodes recorded, and I'm going to be pushing them out after Christmas, once a week. So hopefully you will be getting a bunch more of episodes in your ears to enjoy. Some of the guests are really, really wonderful. And I'm really excited to put them out. Doing the podcast ended up at the bottom of my list of priorities just because life stuff got in the way. I started releasing music with The Early Purple, started doing a lot more gigs, you know. So it just kind of took a little bit of a backseat, but I'm back. I've got a bunch of episodes to put out. I can't wait to get them out. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for staying patient with me and just hanging on and just checking the episodes out when they come. And yeah, I hope everybody has a lovely Christmas and spent some lovely time with their friends and family, drinking, eating, chilling out. And we'll see you in between Christmas and New Year for the next episode. Ciao, ciao for now. Bye-bye.